This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The Essentials, serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. Good evening and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, and this evening, as usual, we're going to have ourselves a good conversation right here on The Essentials, The Reset of Guardian Radio. The numbers to join us are 323-6232, 325-4259, 325-4316, and the text line is 422-4796. So how is it going for you? We are now into the second month of the year. How is it going for you? Are you progressing as you anticipated? Are things going the way you thought they would when you came out of 2023? And, you know, how is national life shaping up? Last week, we had a discussion around Haiti, the developments in Haiti, and how we believe the Bahamas should be and must play a significant role in that. And also what we believe to be the important and central role that CARICOM has to play, must play, if the Bahamas and the rest of the region is going to be spared for what could be some potentially chaotic circumstance. But more importantly, more largely, and I think more significantly, is the overarching need for us as a region, once and for all, finally, step up to the plate and make our presence be felt so that one of the countries which is a part of the Caribbean Brotherhood can finally benefit, can finally see some sort of coming together of the minds, individuals who may be on opposite poles, individuals who, as I mentioned last week, may very well be persons that you would not ordinarily take to the table. I noticed during the course of the week, I saw something written which really echoed the points I made, that the way forward for Haiti may very well be that you will find persons who are now, this very moment, be classified as gangsters and individuals who are seen with outrage. They may have to become central to the whole solution. They may have to be embraced, because ultimately a sustainable solution requires all factions to be at the table. I say this to say that the circumstance since the last time we spoke last Thursday, week before last Thursday, situation has gotten worse. There are a lot of things which are happening on the ground. There are earthquakes. There are further breakdown in security. And so we have to keep an eye on that situation. It's developing, changing rapidly, and the impact is going to be consistent. We are anticipating next week. Next week we get to the 15th, but whenever that day is, we're anticipating the CARICOM meeting here in the Bahamas. And certainly for those of us like myself who don't have the privilege of visiting or are attending, we await the outcome. And one of the outcomes that we look for in a very fundamental way is an announcement on what the plan is going to be going forward for it. Are we going to, as the arguments made last week, were we going to adopt something that looks like a Marshall Plan? If not a Marshall Plan, but certainly a comprehensive plan that does not simply stop at security and aid, but move further beyond that to include security, include aid where necessary, but as a short-lived part of a longer, long-term sustainable solution. But move to the place where we have investment and opportunities for trade and economic development, which is going to then create the pull factor, or in a more finite way, the holding factor, which stops persons, reduce and preclude the need to leave their shores, or at least to leave their shores in the manner that they're leaving, because we would have created an environment which now has possibility, where there's hope for development, where there's hope for growth, where there's hope for better things to come. And hopefully, if we can solve that, and we anticipate that CARICOM will play a part, and we anticipate that CARICOM will make a major announcement coming out of the upcoming meeting right here in the Bahamas. And so we look forward to these things. We look forward to seeing solutions finally being put on the table, solutions which are Caribbean-centric, because the others have not worked, the international approach has not worked. And so it is with great hope, great anticipation and enthusiasm under the leadership of the Prime Minister of the Bahamas, we are looking for, we are anticipating, even predicting that this time around there is going to be a greater, more finite, more structured, more pragmatic, more practical type of a planning and announcement as it relates to our Caribbean sister, the country of Hispaniola, Haiti. And so we are going to take ourselves a very quick break, and when we come back, talk about a couple of issues which may be slightly related, but then we'll get into a little bit of an economic discussion. Want to take a look at the statement made by Moody's. I took a quick overview. Well, not a quick overview. I did read it through thoroughly. And it's a good one. It's not necessarily bad, as some persons may have coined it. They use the word optimistic. It did not say over optimistic. It did not say over ambitious. It said optimistic. And certainly, when we come back and when we discuss it, I will explain to you why I believe optimistic is a good thing. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. Don't move. Come right back. Is not going to give us a break, so we'll just go right on in. Are we taking a break, producer?
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Back to the essentials as we listen to the Right Honorable Robert Nesta Marley, who had a birthday recently, and certainly one of the iconic figures of the Caribbean, an iconic figure out of Jamaica, international reggae artist, well known, and today we celebrate them. As I celebrate my sister's birthday too, today she's having a birthday, so she's all the way over there in Jamaica, you know, celebrating someplace, you know, have some fun, big up yourself and leave my drink. Keep it cool and I'll join you soon. So we are talking about some of the things which are happening, and we mentioned it. But there's also an area which there's no overarching need for me to lend my voice, but I wish to comment on it. And that is the recent news item, the recent announcement that the Prime Minister was threatened. And, you know, the conversation around that went in interesting the directions. And I am not going to get into that type of a discussion because, you know, I don't know these other persons. They know the facts. They know what it is. We don't want to impugn anybody. But the bottom line is that the one thing that we cannot and must not tolerate, and we have to speak out on this very loudly and very clear and very unequivocal, is you cannot have a circumstance where in a country, leaders, regardless of what you think about them, whether you like them, whether you associate with them, whether you share a totally different philosophy, whether it is that you feel that you have been harmed by them, it doesn't matter. Leaders who hold office and represent the country at the highest level requires automatically, you don't have to love them, but you should show respect. You should show public respect. And if you have to criticize, if you have to comment, you do so respectfully and you do so with a level of sobriety, which is going to facilitate discussion and not rancor. And so when we heard certain announcements and certain reports directed at the Prime Minister in recent time, we want to say to persons out there, you know, let's think about it. Let's count to 10. Let's figure out a way where we can have these conversations, where we can discuss the things that we disagree on, where we can put the issues which are very, very critical, important, as far as national life is concerned. We can put them out there in the arena. We can put them out there in the square. And we can have a discussion designed to realize consensus, or at least designed to realize a level of understanding. You may not get to agreement, but you certainly want to be able to share and get feedback from the other side. But there are certain things which are certainly not tolerable, cannot be. And here is one of the main reasons why we should dissuade or persuade anybody from going in that direction. These things have a way of seeping out into the public psyche, or at least seeping over and spilling over to persons who may be so inclined, who may be open to that. Some persons who are in some ways gullible, some persons who are impressionable. And once you start to have that, you have a change in the environment. In my observation of the Bahamas as an import, one of the things that I've always admired is on the political scene, there's always been some level, there's always, because it's adversarial, there's always been a level of back and forth and, you know, quote unquote, quarrel. But it has never gotten to the point, in my experience, I understand that there was maybe one or two incidents that took place before I got here. But it has not ever risen to the point where you see any type of physical violence or persons, getting overly pushy with each other. And that way it ought to be, that is the way it ought to remain. And so if you support a faction, if you have a view as to what a particular administration is doing, or the opposition, or anybody for that matter who holds position in national leadership, you have to be deliberate and intentional in determining how you are going to prosecute those arguments. We have to be deliberate and intentional, understanding that when you spill certain things over in the public square, it affects the national psyche. It affects the environment. It affects the level of tension. It affects the way persons feel that they are able to participate, those who have the capabilities and those who would do good and well for the country might say, you know, I don't want to be there. I don't want to be in that type of arrangement, of that type of exposure. So be mindful. And on the other side of the coin is this. Whether your views align with the party being targeted or the individual being targeted, you have to, in a very unequivocal way, and necessarily as part of a public duty and public responsibility, you have to step out and you have to make statements which move that conversation in the opposite direction, or are designed to move that type of an approach, that type of attitude in the opposite direction. For those other persons who enjoy national leadership, who enjoy leadership in important and influential organizations and segments of the society, I believe you have an overt obligation to step out and to speak to these things, regardless of who has been targeted. Because part and parcel of that whole process is we have to work collectively. We have to work sensibly and deliberately to ensure that the cohesiveness of society, the fabric of cohesiveness, of cohesion that we enjoy to the extent that we do enjoy that. But there are many things which are tugging and tearing at that. But the extent to which the cohesion is there, it has to be protected. It has to be nurtured. And it can only be nurtured when a positive sentiment, a large uprising of positive sentiment, moves against anything which is negative. So when persons are shouting out and saying certain things towards a national figure, a member of parliament, someone who, or I just, as a matter of fact, anybody for that matter, but definitely we carve out a bigger space for national leaders. It should be such that there is such great awareness that even in the moment that those persons who have disagreement, even with all of the emotion running, they should be so aware that they're able to immediately say, absolutely not, we don't do that, don't do that here, let's tamp that down and let's do this in a civilized, sensible manner. That is important. I believe it is important because at the end of the day, democracy, the democracy we choose to live by, is nurtured by activism. But the activism must be built, in my mind, on some fundamental principles. And those fundamental principles cannot in any way be seen to encourage anything which aligns with violence, anything which aligns with hurting others, anything which aligns with maligning individual names or characters, thing which is going to take away from the overall collective value of the country. And if you start to tear at the fabric of cohesion, if you start to become too divisive, if you start to create broad, wide factions amongst persons, that's exactly what you're doing. You're taking away from the national cohesion, and that does not, in the long run, benefit the country. So we anticipate that persons are going to do better. We anticipate that those who have the opportunity to speak to these things will speak to them in a positive way, in a way which is designed to take the temperature down, in a way which is designed to signal to those who would step outside the bright line, who would go beyond the guardrails, that, you know, here's an example of how you do it. The fact of the matter is that we are not impressed by what you're doing, and therefore understand that while we respect your right, while we respect the sovereignty that you enjoy in terms of the rights which are guaranteed to you by the Constitution, while all of that is respected, there is going to be no support, no celebration for that type of an expression. Because what we would want to have at the end of it is activism which is positive, activism which demands response, activism which creates positive value for the entire country, broader than those who are directly at the forefront, because you know how these things go. Yes, there's some things which need to be argued for, protest about, discussed, but not everyone is going to turn up. But those who do have to recognize that they do so on behalf of a broader, even maybe quiet or silent grouping. But you do so on behalf of them. You don't just represent yourself in and of yourself. You need to step out and create that type of a representation. It has to be positive. It has to be laced and underlined with integrity. It has to be done with a level of sobriety, with soberness, respect, sensitivity, sensibility. It has to do the things which in the long run, when you receive the result or the response that you demand and you look back at it, you don't see more harm done than the good you may have desired. And so we here on The Essentials just want to lend our voice in that regard. And, you know, don't do that. It's not a good thing. We see elsewhere, we see in other places where these things happen, and we understand ultimately what they lead to. And none of those things are positive. And there's absolutely no need in a close-knit community where while it may not be automatic, I believe that much more than many other places, one who seeks audience will get it sooner or later, or in some way, at some level, will get it. There are great opportunities, public platform, public opportunities for voicing concerns, for making serious public arguments. And we have to do that. And so, in a way, we say to those persons who may have been less than they should have been in the moment, and we just hope it's a slip and this is not an entrenched type of a behavior or an outlook, you know, rethink that. It's not the way to go. And without condemning you to the pits of anywhere, we're saying change your attitude, change your outlook, and think about what you do from a bigger perspective, outside of you, outside of your narrow grouping, and understand that it has to be for country, it has to be for the better good. And the way you deal with that necessarily requires you to behave in a much better way. Also connected to that is, again, I'm still touching on the activism. So on one level, it was driven by the things which were shouted out to the Prime Minister, and subsequently the phone calls that went into the Prime Minister's office or wherever they went, threatening, you know, those are no-no and we condemn this. Yeah. But there's also another side to this. It may be connected, I don't know. But we see in recent times some instance of activism, especially as it relates to immigration. And oftentimes because we have a particular view of an outcome that we would like, because we support the ultimate goal, we oftentimes sometimes not pay sufficient attention to the mode in which things are done. And my admonition to everybody, to anyone who is looking on, who is participating, who may be cheering on, is that you have to celebrate activism which is based on certain principles. And one of those principles have to be that we celebrate things which are done in ways which recognize and respect the fundamental rights. That we celebrate activism which does not in any way seek to dehumanize any individual or any group of individuals. That we celebrate and support activism which is done in a way where you may not agree with the approach, but on analysis, when you turn it over, turn it upside down, it's not tainted with anything which could be colored by illegality. And we have seen some of these things in recent times. And we've seen them happen. We've heard persons who will not themselves do it, but more than silently, you know, they're not shouting, but they're saying, yeah, you know, go on, the boy. Shouldn't be celebrated. Absolutely, unequivocally should not be celebrated. We have to get to the place where we understand that the solutions that we desire, valid and good solutions they are, cannot be secured in any tainted way. It cannot. Because those things create a very slippery slope. And this is one of the things persons must understand. That when we do things in a certain way, there's a certain level of learning that happens. And persons then become convinced that because the result which is desired emerged, the next time we have a challenge with anything, we should employ the same approach. Now, here is what usually happens. The approach which was employed wasn't good, wasn't useful, wasn't a thing done with integrity or a level of humanness. But the result is realized anyway, and that part of the problem is out of the way. And you celebrate it. Then there comes a time when there is a problem with you. You are now the source. You are now the focus of these persons. And you know exactly what they're going to do. They're going to employ similar tactics. It may be different because the circumstance and the realities and the facts are different, but they are going to employ a similar modus operandi towards you. And at that point in time, you're going to start to squeal, you're going to start to cry, you're going to start to bawl and say, why are these people behaving the way they do? Why are they behaving in such unrighteous manner? Why are they behaving in such manner which is closely aligned to illegal tactics? Why are they behaving in such a manner which does not respect my humanity? But you celebrated them when they did it otherwise. So, the point is, we have to be careful. We have to be careful. I would not in any way, shape, or form sit here on this radio and say to anyone, don't do what you think you are 100% committed to. Don't do the things that you think are right, which is going to advance the cause of your country. But do it right. Do it legally. Do it respecting persons' human rights. And do it in such a way that you yourself, when you're finished, when you would have achieved what is it that you desire, you can be held up as an example of how we can make things work properly, not the other way. Say, hey, yeah, yeah, you got it done, but you don't want to be associated with that. No, don't come around here, just stay in here. Because that, therefore, is a suboptimal outcome. You want to be successful in such a way that it can be celebrated unequivocally because it's done right. It's done properly. It's done respectfully. It's done understanding that you're just not trampling on anybody or trying to or giving the appearance of trampling on anyone. I think those things are important. So when we look and when we encourage, we certainly encourage activism. Without activism, this experiment called democracy won't work. Without activism, this experiment called democracy is absolutely won't. In an environment with political parties, without activism, without protests, and protests don't mean that you go outside and jump up and make up noise. Protests can be done in multiple ways. It may be simply having a meeting. It may be simply writing a very pointed letter which gets to the right place. And then at times when you are ignored, it may necessitate picking up your placard and calling some friends and going for a walk through the square. Of course, with the requisite permission, doing it within the confines of the laws. And if that doesn't happen, the tensions that are necessary to keep everyone on the straight and narrow will kind of erode, move away, and you will find the experiment, the way we choose to live in a democratic country, one man, one vote, where each person have a voice, where individuals are free to express themselves, those things could go away without activism, without protests, without persons who put themselves maybe on the front line or into whatsoever pressure groups that they want to be a part of. And they ensure that those lines are kept tight and they ensure that the tensions are maintained. They ensure that persons stay true to the commitments that they make. They stay true to statements that they make. They stay true to what is in the best interest of country. But it has to be done properly, legally, with respect, humanity, human rights. Otherwise, otherwise, the suboptimal outcome eventually is going to prove less than valuable for the country. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, I have one other thing I want to chit-chat with you a bit. This is that evening. You're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, and we'll be talking about a bit of this and a bit of that. When we come back, I want to have a brief look at a recent event that was held at COB in reference to with Sir Franklin Wilson and the Sunshine Boys. I wasn't in attendance, but saw a little bit of the coverage, got some of the feedback. There was something that I saw which really, really jumped out at me and kind of piqued my imagination. Let's have a talk about that. Franklin Wilson and the Sunshine Boys. 50 years after, you listen to The Essentials. Don't move. I'm right back.
You know it's so essential, so serious.
Next Level Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions, practical solutions delivered.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-00. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to The Essential. As Bob Marley says, let's get together and feel all right. We are celebrating a little bit about Marley. This is his birthday month. I think it was on the 6th that he would have celebrated his birthday had he been around. So we want to send a big hail out to the international man, the man from the Caribbean, the man from Jamaica, the reggae icon, Robert Marley. We're having a conversation, and I think that's an appropriate song to segue into this other part of the discussion. Let's get together and feel all right. You know, if you spend a couple of days in the Bahamas, any couple of days, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you are at some point in time, you're going to hear about Sunshine Boys. You're going to hear about Franklin Wilson, certainly, if you are listening carefully. And they stand out as an example, as I understand it, as I listen. I don't know what your take is on this, but they stand out as an example of what is possible Obviously, it's a grouping of individuals that come with, analysis of that grouping would be way more complex than the conversation goes, in my mind, to be honest. There's no question about success, but I know that there are going to be pros and cons in any discussion around the grouping. But any entity, any group of individual, I think with varying background that come together time and stay together for 50 years, have to be worthy of celebration in some way, shape, or form. And I think they have proven it. For the most part, when you hear Sunshine, you automatically think about Sir Franklin Wilson. Some of the other persons are not always readily known. But it's important as a country, I think, because the country is going to be celebrating 50 years. It's important as a country to maybe, and I'm sure there are other groupings out there, but to pick these individuals as an example. And maybe even so, especially for persons who are more from the African diaspora, for very obvious reasons. And ask yourself, how is it that we can come together? Like Bob Marley said, feel all right, but seriously, come together, pool resources, pool effort. And by resources, I'm not simply speaking to dollars and cents, but pool resources, all the resources you have, all of the relationship, all of the connections you have. I've had the pleasure of speaking with Sir Franklin Wilson a number of times. And in true form, at some point in time in those conversations, he usually give you a quick overview of, how we got here. There are persons who come together. They are from different factions. Some of them are PLP, some of them are FNM, some of them are Caucasian, some of them are Black people. Some come from up the road, down the road, all over the place. But they came together with a type of outlook. And I guess at the time, 50 years ago or more, they figured, this is what we're going to do. And when we look around, I do not know all of the ins and outs and the details, but just from what is visibly, they have been successful. And the question, therefore, is how can others, how can especially young people right now today who are looking around and looking for a way up, a way out, and a very challenge, how can they put their resources together? How can they live in such a way smartly? Now, I know that everyone out there is going to not want to be as aligned with politics as some of these persons are. I know that some of them are in the public sphere, but the principles are what is important. How do you lend your own network to another network and then use that to build value? Project after project and turn that into thing of creating wealth. How do you build organizations which can be handed over to the next generation and potentially the next generation? I think those are important takeaways from observing. And while I did not have the pleasure of being at COB this week, I'm in a group and someone wrote a message or forwarded a message. And there are a couple of things in that message, it just jumped out at me. And I think the individual was kind of taking notes based on an interview which was taking place with us. And the individual noted that the key words were capacity and intentionality. Capacity and intentionality. Big words. Important words. The first one, capacity, is you need that. If you don't have that, you can't do nothing. From my personal perspective, I have a lot that I would love to do, but not necessarily have the capacity to do it. There are persons out there who one or two working together, they want to do certain things, but they don't have the capacity to need other persons. They need more. They need relationship. They need friendship. They need to be facilitated. They need to be guided. They need to be mentored. We need different things. But at the end of the day, it's about building the capacity in order to get to where you want. Now, like I said, I wasn't there, so I'm just playing on the words as it was posted. I'm just kind of gleaning what I think the essence may have been in that discussion. And intentionality. Intentionality is important. Where exactly is it that you're going? What is it that you want to achieve? I would figure that 50 years ago when this group came together and sat down, they say, you know, one day we want to be big men in this town. Big men in this town. We want to grow wealth. We want to have great families. We want to support great causes. We want to be nation builders. And then they intentionally set out to do that. And, you know, they recognize, well, we have to be associated with this group, and some of us have to be associated with that group. And we have to have the individuals who are most capable will do the leading, and those who are in the public or who are more comfortable with being in the public, then you will have to go out in the public, you will have to speak, you become the voice. That's the intentionality. But at the end of the day is we are going to move ourselves from point A to point B, and we are going to be very serious about it. Yes, there are going to be challenges. Yes, there are going to be hurdles to overcome, but we are going to do it nonetheless. And, you know, it had to be exciting time for these particular persons looking at the history of the Bahamas coming out of the 1960s, getting into independence, a new nation with self-determination, a place where the majority Black people now have opportunities to do things that they didn't have. It must have been an exciting time. An opportune time, too. Certainly, I don't think that the opportunity which existed there and then is going to often replicate itself in terms of, you know, just historically. But it must be more even exciting and fulfilling for them to look back and connect the dots and see how they have not only impacted their own lives, the lives of their families and those around them, but certainly impact the life of the country. It has to be when you emerge through your entrepreneurship, when you emerge through the things that you set out to intentionally do, to become national icons. Have to be valuable, have to be a great feeling. And so you have to, as the words were shared, the capacity and the inclination, and in bracket the person put, to do. So the inclination to do, not just to sit around and talk about things which need to be done, things which can be done, what, who need to do what, but to do it, to get it done, to move through the hurdles, to overcome the barriers, to work in such a way that the things which are challenging you from getting to your goals get surmounted. Capacity and inclination. The person also included in the message which was sent, he says that we cannot fail. I do not know the context that that was used in, but I'm going to play around with it. It might have been that they sat down together and said, guess what? Based on who we are, based on what we have decided to do here, based on the national circumstances, we cannot fail. Because if we fail, if we were to fail, the messaging that would come out of that would be so huge, so humongous, so significant that it would affect the psyche of others. So we cannot fail. We have to win. And this is not just a win for self. It's a win for country. Again, historically, looking at where they started, how they started, that may have been the conversation. Is that type of a mindset valuable for today? Absolutely. Whatsoever it is that we want to do, whatever it is that we decide to do, whether collectively or individually, I think we need to take on a mindset of we can't fail. I am doing this thing and I cannot afford to, whether it's for family, it's for kids, your children are looking on, you cannot afford to fail. You have to be in a place where you do the things which are necessary to win, because others are looking on. You are an example. Persons are depending on you. And that type of a psyche of, we just can't afford that to happen, has to permeate everything you do. We could play around with that and look at it a different way, that because we have come together in the way we have come together, with the attitude that we're taking towards this thing, the approach that we're taking, the intentionality that we're going to apply, we can't fail. We simply have the formula which is going to cause us to win. That's one other way of looking at it. I think that's a lesser speculation than the first, but that would be applicable anyway. And it would be a useful attitude for us today, persons who are starting out, whether you're young or you're older, you have some desire to do some things. Start with an attitude that we can't fail. Start with an attitude that we are going to do the things necessary to win. Start with an attitude that we are in a position to be able to send and set an example for others. So we simply are putting onto ourselves this obligation, holding ourselves accountable to not losing, to winning, because of the others, because of country, because of a bigger cause, because we are inheriting a circumstance which sometimes persons look on and say, because of your circumstance, because of who you are, you can't win at anything. You can't do anything. You are not capable. You're not competent. Now you step out there and say, look, I am going to do it and I can't lose. You can't lose for those reasons, because there are many persons out there who believe that you can't do it, or alternatively would wish for you not, so that you can remain who you are, be who you are, and nothing more. Consensus. There was a sharing, obviously, he talked about until we agree. So obviously there's going to be disagreement, but you keep going at it until you get to a consensus. Consensus in strict form is not agreement, but you keep going at it. But the person also shared, no shouting, no profanity. An environment of civilness, an environment of respect, an environment of integrity, an environment which says, we are building relationships here. I'm happy to be around you. I'm happy that you are around me. I value you. I want you here. I need your opinion. End of the day, we're doing something. We have already told ourselves that we cannot lose. So why are we going to quarrel? We must come to an agreement in order to make it happen. Again, this is me putting words on, obviously, that message we put here. But I can envision that that's the type of thing which could have been spoken. And then finally, in the message, it says, you win, you try to minimize mistakes. So you win on defense. Anyone who has played sport knows that you could be like the Golden State Warriors and you could shoot out the lights. You could put up 150 points. But if the other side goes down 200 times and each time they go down there, they score, well, they will be 200 to 150. And so in order to minimize your loss, in order to minimize or maximize your ability to win, you have to defend. You have to be careful about what you're doing. You have to make sure that you don't make mistakes. And when you make mistakes, you have to learn from them and use them as a platform to maximize your capacity and your competence. You have to take care of the little things which is going to reduce the inevitable loss. Losses are going to happen, but it's going to reduce it in a way such that you effectively gain, because something is going to be lost. And you reduce it to some extent. So the reduction is, but also it reduces the effect that it may have on being disruptive to your cause. So you win on defense. You very, very carefully say, look, we need to plan. We need to know that all our T's are crossed and our I's are dotted, right? Not, you know, be overly working for in a perfectionist type of way. But you have to go out and you have to do the things which are not going to cause you to lose out on this adventure that you want. Not frolic, but an adventure. A deliberate, intentional adventure to gain certain things, to secure certain things, to achieve certain things. An adventure which is undergirded by this idea of building capacity and undergirded by intentionality. Because with capacity come the ability to do more, to have more, expand, to touch more, to serve more persons, to serve in a bigger way, in a better way, in a more competent way. So I believe that in this year, the 50th year of the Bahamas independence, it's also good to look back and to pass our minds and our eyes on some of these individuals who have helped to build country. Individuals who have worked hard and toiled hard to make things better. Now, we don't pretend that they weren't doing it for themselves. But you have to look at the added value, the spillovers, the facilitation, persons who benefit as a result of working with them, investing with them, associating with them. And while, as I said up front, no two persons may necessarily see this the same way. And I'm sure it is when you get down to nuts and bolts, a little bit more complex conversation could be had. I think there are such bones of inspiration emanating from that grouping. It ought to be talked about, and certainly that's what they sought to do over there at UB recently. I just got this little message and it stuck with me. Work hard to build capacity and work with intentionality. Have the inclination to do. The inclination to do, not to sit back on our laurels and say, you know, it's not me who is going to do that, blame the government. The inclination to do. Become comfortable with pooling resources. Not always comfortable. All of us struggle with that sometimes. It's the issues of trust and, you know, justifiable selves. Some of us have been burned. Some of us have associated with individuals who have caused us to question all of humanity. But we have to understand that when we pool, when we come together, when we do things together, we can achieve more, we have greater capacity, and then there is consensus. And I think that is the one which I want to talk until we agree. I believe there is a need, as we get to the celebration of the 50th year of the Bahamas, I believe there is a need, an overt need, and an urgent need for greater consensus, for greater discussions, for greater commitment to what the future of the Bahamas represent and what is required to get the Bahamas there. I honestly believe that. Too often we see discussions happening at the national level and it is done in ways where it seems as if persons are trying to slide between raindrops. Or persons have these conversations based on where they sit in the moment. I honestly believe, or I would hope, I would wish, that this year, the 50th year of independence, would create that type of a platform, would create that type of a consensus, that a shift is needed. And the shift is only there are better conversations taking place. There's always a place for adversarial wranglings. There must be. We talked about that earlier. That's what keeps the tensions in the place where they need to be. That's what keeps this experiment called democracy going. But there are some critical fundamental issues on which there need to be consensus. And that consensus need to be had at the highest levels. And that consensus need to seep into the national psyche such that for those who want to do so, for those who are committed and willing to do so, they get this idea that there is a path, that there is an obligation, that there is a collective commitment to move forward together, to achieve more, to do more. I think it's critically, critically important. So that's the last thing I would take away from the note, which obviously this individual was making the presentation by Sir Franklin Wilson, and he shared that in the group. And I believe that nugget or those nuggets can inform us at a personal level. But that particular one about consensus, and we talk until we agree, should be useful, should be instructive, and should be given due consideration as we get to 50. But more importantly, ask ourselves, what is beyond? What comes after? What will exist? What will subsist in the next 50? You're listening to The Essentials of the Reset. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, and we're going to take ourselves a break here. When we come back, we're going to wrap this up with a quick conversation on Moody's. I'm going to tell you why I believe that the Moody's report is good news. Very, very good news. Some persons see it differently. There's a cautionary tone to it, but I believe that the way it has been reported is certainly positive news. Don't move. Come right back.
Next Level Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experience. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions, practical solutions delivered.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio, fresh news, smart talk.
to The Essentials, The Reset. We're listening to Bob Marley, who celebrated a birthday this week, sometime earlier this month, and certainly send a shout out to my sister over there. I think she might be listening. Maybe she is. But certainly happy birthday to you as we celebrate your birthday today. And you celebrate in the month of Bob Marley. Great man. So big, iconic, international reggae artist. Enjoy. Drink a drink and sip one for me and save one for me. So we are having this conversation, well, more like a monologue. We talked about activism earlier. We talked about the issue of 80 and kind of outline our expectation or anticipation. Maybe expectation is too strong a word, but our anticipation of what may be coming out of the meeting, CARICOM meeting coming up shortly right here in the Bahamas. We talk about activism and the need for integrity and respect and sensibility and humanness and respecting the rights of individuals. And then we segue into a discussion on the Sunshine Boys and a recent presentation done by Sir Franklin Wilson. And some words, just a message which came out of that, which came to my eyes, and I said, you know, take these words and we'll talk a little bit about it. And we wrap that segment up or that section up by saying, look, we need to take this particular word, consensus, and ensure that there's more of that national level because it's going to be needed going forward. And so we segue now to take a look at what did Moody say recently? What did Moody say recently in its report? They put out a composite report and the Bahamas was mentioned there. The headline read, Bahamas fiscal plans are optimistic on growth and revenue collection, but policy targets will be challenged. Now, the first part of that is, and some persons read it like this, the Bahamas fiscal plans are too optimistic, full stop. But that's not what it says. It says that the fiscal plans are optimistic on growth and they're optimistic on revenue collection. And my friend, I submit to you, that's exactly what they need to be, optimistic. As we speak, the projections coming out of the fiscal strategy will grow the economy up to $16 billion in 2026-27 and will have a surplus of about 1.9%. Optimistic. As we speak, the fiscal strategy report projects up to 2026-27 that government revenue is going to climb to $4 billion from the previously historical level of $2.6 billion. And in that process, the country is going to achieve the revenue to GDP, which has been targeted at 25%. Well, actually, it is targeted to achieve that the year before 2026-27. So that would be 25-26. Optimistic. Why am I harping on that? The truth of the matter is, when you look at where the Bahamas has performed over the last decade or so, averaging between 1 and maybe 2%, there are instances where it got to maybe 2.2 at its highest. I think there were one or two instances. That level of growth is certainly inadequate, significantly inadequate for the way forward. When we look at what happened in terms of the impact from the pandemic, and then we look at the reconsolidation which is taking place more rapidly than initially anticipated. But if you drill below the surface, you will understand, you will readily appreciate, and this is the direction in which the projection from the strategy report points, is that government revenue remains inadequate and needs to grow. The government is not minded, it seems, to move to secure that revenue growth through tax treatments or fees. And consequently, the only other way that that can happen is as a result of growing the economy. So let's celebrate that. While there are some cautionary notes, while I will propose to you that it's not going to be easy to get to those numbers, the direction that those numbers are pointing out, targets which have been created, are in the right direction. Whether they're absolutely correct, I don't know, but they are certainly in the right direction. So Moody's said going economic recovery to aid in a rapid improvement in fiscal balance, turning to a 1.9% GDP surplus in fiscal 25. So that's what the government said it's going to do through its strategy report, fiscal strategy report. The government expects a steady increase in revenue and tight control over spending to drive improving fiscal outlook. So on one hand, there has to be increase in revenue. And on the other hand, government is going to maintain a tight rein on spending. That's always going to be a positive. If you can hold spending back and if you can grow the revenue, then that is going to be an effective formula for growth. Always going to be an effective formula for any country because it means that you are earning more than you're spending. Obviously, that's why we terminate in a surplus. And if this surplus is being driven by growth and not by the same level of performance of the economy, then that is going to be, you know, two times positive. The fiscal projections embedded in the fiscal strategy report would reduce government debt below 70% of GDP by fiscal 2026 from the 87% that it currently is or was in fiscal 2022. And that will result in it nearly reversing all that has happened as a result of what we have experienced since Hurricane Dorian in 2019 when the debt was just below 60% of GDP. So the trajectory is perfect, fine. Moody's says that it is recommending, it is forecasting, that is Moody's itself, having looked at the government's projection, that it is recommending a slightly slower trajectory. And I think this is where we have to read every single word in it. It is projecting a slightly slower trajectory. So the government is a little bit faster than Moody's see, but only slightly so. And it expects that the lowering in spending will broadly offset revenue shortfalls to comply with the government fiscal responsibility targets. So really embedded in the statement is that statement. We forecast a similar, that's what I said. The government says this is what we are going to achieve. Moody says we forecast a similar, albeit slightly slower, trajectory. So in a way, it is endorsing it. And this is what the outset that I believe that this assessment, which goes out to the to the debt market, is positive for the country. It then goes on to say that even with a reduction in this debt burden, the Bahamas will have one of the highest debt-to-GDP ratio amongst B-rated peers. That is true. But one of the things I want to point out when you look at the chart is that included in that grouping are all of the countries, whether they're rated B1 or B2. The Bahamas, in this instance, is rated a B1. And I think that has to be factored into the discussion in some way. The Bahamas is rated higher than most of the others. It is, in terms of debt to GDP, only outstripped by Bahrain and Egypt. So, you know, yes, the debt is high, but still, we always have to be mindful that the Bahamas can afford to pay more. It's simply that, in my mind, that where the country is right now with its economic arrangement, the level of GDP, that is the size of the economy, and the mechanism of taxation or fees that currently feeds into government revenue, that impacts the affordability. So the growth which is envisioned in the fiscal strategy report helps to fix that, starts to fix that. Because if the economy expands, so basically you have an economy of 10 and your taxation is 2% or 10%, so that means you get in $1 each time. If you expand that to 20 by keeping your taxation still at 10%, you end up with $2. So, any type of a strategy which is going to be forward, which doesn't embrace or envision growth, just really don't make any sense at this point. Cannot make any sense. And so from that point of view, it is to be applauded, it's to be celebrated, that government is optimistic. They have certainly more information than I have. We can only speak to things which are out in the public. But it went back to the drawing board and it looked at the forecast for 2021, and it says that forecast was not as aggressive as we want to be. We are more optimistic. We have seen some things. The reconsolidation is faster and more entrenched than we thought it would be at this point in time. So there are some other things that we need. We are also looking at various sectors, including agriculture and some other areas which we expect and we think we want to use to drive overall growth. So those are all positive. Again, sometime in a backhanded way, you get an endorsement which could be misinterpreted. But the second part of the headline read, but policy targets will be challenging. And that, in my mind, is just an honest truth. Revenue to GDP getting to 25% is going to be challenging to reach. Debt to GDP getting down to the 70s is going to be challenging to reach. The fact of the matter is that if you get the economic growth, then the mathematics will take care of that. You have a bigger denominator, so consequently, the ratio is going to fall. So that projection is a function of the expected growth. And if that growth isn't realized, then we are going to be staying solidly in the 80s or the high 70s. So everything must come. So this is where the caution comes in. Then there's also the issue around interest costs, which I have spoken to many times. And I've made the point that debt, some persons don't agree with this, but debt is really for the Bahamas one of the biggest limiting factors in all of the planning and all of the execution of strategy going forward, at least in the near term. Until we are able to fix that and get it to a level which is more manageable and more sustainable, it's going to be like that for a while. And here is why. Right now, the Bahamas is faced with a port which is not optimal. It works against the country. Firstly, in terms of the ratio of domestic debt to international debt, and then the ratio at the international level, the ratio of debt which is secured through the capital markets, the aggressive market, if you will, and that which may have been secured from multinational agency, which used to come at a cheaper rate with concession, that mix right now is not optimal for the country. And as a result of that, at this point in time, I would conclude that our interest charge, our cost of funding is elevated and will remain elevated for a while. If there's anything, any area which I would pinpoint in terms of the fiscal strategy report, which I do not readily think is going to materialize as outlined, is that interest line. Because while the debt to GDP may be coming down, that's only mathematics. While the absolute amount of debt is reducing, the rate at which it is reducing is not, in my mind, significant enough to drive down the cost of funding unless there can be a reasonably radical reorganization of the portfolio. Unless we can get more of the high cost debt out of the portfolio replaced with low cost or domestic debt. I've said that over and repeatedly, and this is exactly what Moody's is indicating here. And it says the government revised macro fiscal projection increasing 25% of GDP up to 2026. The revenue projections are higher than those in the 2021 fiscal strategy report. So the government went back to the drawing board and says, you know, we can do better. And it's mainly reflected in the stronger than expected recovery of fiscal 2022, creating a higher base for revenue collections for future years. So the economy came back stronger than expected. So there is a bigger base, there's a stronger universe, if you will, than was expected, which can be taxable universe, bigger than we thought it would be at this point in time back in 2021. The government strategy for reaching the 25% revenue to GDP rests on continued economic growth, importantly, particularly in the era of tourism, which is a key driver of tax collection. So definitely we want to see tourism booming. We want to see it growing and expanding. There have been some fantastic stories coming out of the tourism sector that needs to continue. So the government anticipates to improve tax compliance and efficiency through administrative policy measures to increase revenue collection. That is obviously the way to go, but of course it comes with some underlying weaknesses. If the only reliance is on collections, and certainly in instance looking at collecting arrears, at some point in time, the efficiency of that process is, if it's highly efficient, then at some point in time, you're going to exhaust the potential collection. All of the arrears will be taken up. And then what? So we have to look at that and kind of stick a pin in that and say, you know, weakness. But on the flip side, if the economy is to grow as projected, then that may be able to smooth out any type of a noise or a disruption or weakness that this particular issue would create. So we have to think about what are the things which are working for the country at this point in time. Moody's point to the fact that, yes, we are a small country and we are exposed to shocks. And if we were to have some sort of a weather event, then that could again impact tourism. But let's keep our fingers crossed that none of this is going to happen. And the one other area that it points out is that these type of event suggests that government growth or the growth in the economy could be a little bit more volatile than the government. Government is projecting nice, smooth 4.5, maybe 5%, 5.8% growth over the next 5 years or so. A serious event could make that a little bit more volatile. We understand that having experienced Dorian, we understand that having experienced COVID. And so we have to work in a very serious way to make sure that the plans which are afoot becomes a reality and we work through them seriously. Here is my area of concern on this. Support the direction, support the projection, need to embrace the whole idea of optimism. But there are some areas in the economy which will only grow, which will only become productive or more productive, forms necessary are implemented. And because we're talking about a very narrow period of about 4 to 5 years, and because we understand and appreciate that if you have not yet implemented the reforms, you're going to require a lag in some instances, maybe 6 months, it could be as much as a year. We have to factor that into how then are these things going to be achieved if the facilitative environment is not yet created. Not saying that they're not. I do not work inside government. There may have been things, that, but we depend on public announcement, public pronouncement. There's a number of things which one would anticipate, which has not been seen yet. And so that for me represents the greatest point of risk to everything which could happen to this particular new projection. But again, I want to underline, directionally perfect. In terms of being optimistic and aggressive, perfect. Need to pay attention to some areas? Definitely. Debt, interest rate, and of course, the need, the overt need for reforms. Moody's end this by saying that without significant change in the maturity profile of government debt, lower interest expenditure would likely require replacing expensive outstanding debt with lower cost borrowing or a significant reduction in borrowing costs going forward. That is where I think the Achilles heel is. The debt is going to take some work, is going to require focused attention in order to get to the place. But it also say that, you know, external borrowing costs is rising, so we have to pay attention to that. We have to pay attention to that the increase in borrowing costs is significantly attached to commercial debt, where the Bahamas have, I think, a little bit more than it would want to have at this point in time. And these, as we would have experienced, have become the main driver of the deterioration of the Bahamas debt affordability. Because of COVID, because we had to kind of strengthen up on our debt to support the reserves, you know, we borrowed some in some places where in normal times we would not have borrowed, and that has impacted affordability. And so the takeaway, the big takeaway for me from this Moody's thing is that its projection aligns very closely to the projection which is being included here for the Bahamas. It is acknowledging that the revenue projections are optimistic, and therefore, this all is going to play into its outlook going forward when it comes back to have a review of the Bahamas creditworthiness. The only thing I think we have to do is to work to ensure that we stay in line with this, because now that we have drawn the line in the sand, it is critically, critically important for us to understand that the Moody's, the S&Ps and the rest of them out there are going to take our word for it, that this is what we want to do. This is where our policy is direct, is pointing us. These are the things that we indicate that we will achieve based on the plans that we have on the table. And consequently, if we fail to do so, then that is indicative of something else. So we want to end on that good news, the Moody's report, positive for the Bahamas. And we want the It is the hope that we will move from strength to strength and we will capitalize on these plans, but we'll also move assiduously and with great urgency to fix those things which are going to create the facilitative environment and give us the biggest bang for our buck. You listen to the Essentials as we celebrate this even Bob Marley's birthday, and we give a shout out to Michelle Edwards Walker over there in Jamaica celebrating her birthday today. It has been my pleasure to be here with you. And as usual, we always end by saying, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. All that's left to say is walk good, one love, and Ubuntu. Good night.